Welcome to another Bible lesson brought by the Hamilton Church of Christ. In Romans chapter 12, verse 1, the Apostle Paul says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Having taught the Christian that they did not have to keep the Mosaic law, one may say, well, does the Christian have to do anything? Here Paul is saying that our bodies are the sacrifice that we present to God. Our bodies are a living sacrifice, which means that our bodies have to be ready at all times to be acceptable to God, not just in one little instant before death, but our bodies are living sacrifice. And we present it to God. It's a living sacrifice. It's holy and acceptable unto God, and it's a reasonable service, which means it's a service that is done with the mind. It's a service of the mind to God. And we know how to serve God with our mind by knowing what God's Word teaches. Join us today in our Bible study.
When clouds and gathered lights spreading across the skies, travel along with courage, singing a song.
Be faithful,
Jesus will smooth your road, lighten your heavy load upon the brighter side.
On the brighter side, look on the brighter side, yes.
Look on the brighter side, shadows will pass away.
Your heart will sing with gladness,
trust in the Lord to guide you. Trust in the Lord to guide you. He'll keep you every day.
Bring away your sadness
when you are bending low, yes. When you are bending low,
and when he
does your life be tired,
almost lose your courage.
The shadows are lifting, the dark clouds. Everything look on the brighter side, on the brighter side. Nothing heavy to dread, the skies are just ahead. Travel along
with courage,
singing a song.
Be faithful,
sunlight will soon break through, shining in splendor new. Look on the brighter side,
on the brighter side.
Look on the brighter side, yes. Look on the brighter side, the shadows will pass.
Sing with gladness,
trust in the Lord to guide you. Trust in the Lord to guide you.
Surely
He'll keep you every day.
Roll away your sadness
when you are bending low. Yes, when you are bending low,
and when
He does your heart be tired,
almost lose your courage.
The shadows are lifting, the dark clouds
everything look on the bright side of life.
Sing with gladness,
trusting the Lord to guide you, trusting the Lord to guide you, keep you every day,
roll away your sadness,
bring you a bending low, yes, bring you a bending low, and when even as your life retires, the shadows are lifting, the dark clouds are lifting, look on the brighter side.
We're continuing our studies. We're still in the chapter, read 18th verse. So our story is that Joseph had been placed over the administration food program for Egypt. He has gone through the 7 years of plenty and done a good job of saving the grain that they could save. At least 20% were saved and stored in great storehouses around about the country at various cities. Now they're in the 7 years of famine. And Joseph also has a tremendous responsibility and authority that goes with distributing this food out so that it will last through the 7 years of famine. And he's selling it to his own nation as they can afford to buy it. He has many other nations, though, sending delegations in to buy this grain, too, so they will not starve during the famine. Well, eventually, his own brothers come down from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph recognizes them. They do not recognize Joseph. Joseph doesn't let them know he can even speak their language. All they know is that they're dealing with this great Egyptian official who has tremendous power. They have to bow down to him. And he's really making it difficult for them to accomplish what they want to accomplish. They have no idea that this great official is their brother Joseph that's sold into slavery. And Joseph is giving them a hard time in a lot of ways because he is wanting them to get the full impact of what has happened. He also is trying to appraise the situation himself. So he actually has them put into prison for 3 days. And verse 18 says, "And Joseph said unto them the third day, This do and live, for I fear God. So after 3 days, Joseph called them again to himself." Now remember, he's speaking through an interpreter. They don't even know he can speak their language. "And he told them it would not be necessary for all of them to remain there. He did not really wish to cause his father and the rest of the household back in Canaan any more grief than necessary. Besides, he felt that 3 days in prison would be enough to cause them to all begin to at least have some kind of a change of heart from their earlier behavior and attitude. They had some time to think this thing over now and maybe reason among themselves. The situation and what had really happened with Joseph might not have even been discussed that much among them. It had been a big, deep secret they'd kept from Jacob." And it's interesting to see that he told them that his change now to allowing them to be set free was due to the fact that I fear God. Since he was apparently an Egyptian, here was a testimony to these children of Israel that it was possible for a high official who lived in an idolatrous land to still know the true and living God and to have his actions guided by the principles of God. Well, verse 19 and 20, "If ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses. But bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your word be verified, and ye shall not die." And they did so. So Joseph told them that it would be sufficient for only one of them to be kept in prison while the rest of them returned home. The one brother would also be released when they returned back to Egypt with their younger brother. In the meantime, they were to go ahead and carry the food which they had come to get back to their homes in Canaan so that their families would be provided for. Joseph was sure they would come back because he knew the famine would last for the full 7 years according to the prophecy and the dream. The brothers also realized they would possibly have to return, even if they should decide it was expedient to abandon the brother who was being held hostage, but at least they could go home for the present and take the urgently needed food back with them. If and when they did return, however, they had better have the younger brother with them or this great governor would decide that they'd been spies after all, and he'd put every one of them to death. Well, by this time, their emotions and consciences were surely in considerable turmoil. Verse 21 says, "And they said one to another, We are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us." So they're now talking about the fact that they really had done a bad thing when they did what they did to Joseph. They say that we saw the anguish of his soul. He was in a great distress. He begged us that we wouldn't do this, and we would not listen to him. Now the shoe is on the other foot, even more than they realize, because they're really dealing with Joseph now, but they don't know it. Now they have some time to think about what they had actually done to their younger brother, and in sensing that all this was a very appropriate punishment on them, they begin to think, well, they're just getting their just returns. When Joseph gave them this ultimatum, they all, with apparently one voice, acknowledged to each other, not realizing that Joseph could understand what they were saying, that this distress came on them because they had sinned against their brother. And we see here that although many sins are recorded in the Bible of God's people and other people, this is one of the few times in which the guilty ones actually make a confession of sin. We see that Jacob made a confession back when he was dealing with Tamar in the case of her pretending to be a harlot. He eventually said that he'd sinned. Well, here we have also a confession of sins. These 10 brothers had truly gone through a traumatic experience the past few days and had stirred their conscience to the very depths. They had done some deep soul searching. They had been forced to think about and talk about this situation that had happened years ago with Joseph, this deep, dark secret that they'd been hiding all this time, this cloud that had been over their lives, this thing that had influenced their very existence here all this time. They'd lived this big lie. But not only had they conspired to slay, then they changed their minds and decided to sell their brother, but they'd ignored his anguish, pleadings to spare him. This must be pricking their conscience now as they think of the way Joseph cried and begged them to save him and not do this thing. They now realize fully that they were receiving what they had long deserved, and so their bitterness was directed against themselves and not against the governor. They realized they were getting their just reward now. Verse 22, "And Reuben answered them, saying, Spake not I unto you, saying, Do not sin against the child, and you would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required." So Joseph probably considered that Reuben, the oldest brother, was chiefly responsible for what his brother had done to him. But now he heard Reuben reminding the others that he had actually tried to persuade them not to carry out their crime. But Reuben, unstable and weak as he was, had never been able to really tell his father the truth, or later to set in motion any attempt to rescue Joseph. He'd been content to sit back and let this lie also languish there all these years. He was not quite as guilty as the others, but he was not innocent either. He really was a part of this thing in that he knew what happened and remained silent. So he, like the others, assumed that most likely Joseph had died in Egypt, and they were all therefore guilty of his blood. Now it seemed as though their own blood would sooner or later be required in payment for this bad deed done to their brother. Verse 23 says, "And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter." None of them had any idea that Joseph could understand what they were saying. So as they talked among themselves, they probably felt like that he didn't know what they were saying, and they could freely express their ideas among themselves. But actually, Joseph was getting an earful here. Joseph could understand them, and he didn't let them know that he knew the language. He'd been very careful to carry this conversation with them through an interpreter. And as we read about this interpreter, it provides a clue to the fact that in spite of the confusion of tongues that was given at Babel, all through the book of Genesis, we read about people of different nations apparently freely conversing with each other. And this reference to an interpreter here makes it obvious that in most cases, at least, these conversations were carried out through interpreters. In those days, as in ours, people were able to learn foreign languages, and evidently there were some linguistic specialists who actually made a profession of working as translators and interpreters. And this was probably so common that ordinarily it's not even mentioned except when, as here, it has a vital bearing on the narrative. Joseph himself had evidently learned the Egyptian language while he was serving in Potiphar's house, but it was to his great advantage at this time to not let his brothers know that he could understand what they were saying. Well, after overhearing this conversation among his brothers, verse 24 says, "And he turned himself about from them and wept, and returned to them again, and communed with them, and took from them Simeon, and bound him before their eyes." As Joseph heard them, he realized that his prayers had been answered. They actually had come to the point of confessing their guilt and repenting of their sin, this thing that they'd held for so long and not done anything about. He himself became so overcome by his emotion that he had to leave them, get away from their presence, so they would not see him weeping. But after regaining control of himself, he came back to them and began giving instructions to them. One of them must stay in prison, bound, while the others went home. Well, here Joseph learns that Reuben had at least partly tried to prevent their crime, so he realized that Simeon was the chief one responsible for the bad things done to him. So he had the guard to take Simeon and put him in bond before their very eyes. Simeon, the next oldest to Reuben, had shown himself to have a cruel nature for a long time. He needed the instruction of time in prison and change more than the others did. He needed the benefit he would gain by this imprisonment to have time to reflect and to realize the gravity of his actions. The nine other brothers must have noticed with some surprise the apparent coincidence that the governor would place in prison the one among them who had been the most responsible for the heinous act, and therefore also he was the one responsible for the problems they were having now with this governor. And so they possibly regarded this as some evidence that God was now placing justice where it needed to be given. Verse 25 says, "Then Joseph commanded to fill their sacks with corn, and to restore every man's money into his sack, and to give them provision for the way, and thus did he unto them. And they laid their asses with the corn and departed thence." So Joseph gave orders now, and he's still speaking in the Egyptian language. They do not know he can speak the Hebrew language. And he ordered that their sacks should be filled with grain, and the men sent on their way. He also told his servants to restore the money that they'd paid for the grain back to them, put it into their respective sacks, and realizing that this would cause them some embarrassment and concern, but he also knew that it would further prick their consciences. But he also knew that they needed this money. He gave it back to them. He offered provisions for the trip. He then quickly loaded the sacks on the asses. They left. And they were probably relieved that they were allowed to leave and not have any more punishment. Obviously, they were anxious to get home. Apparently, they were not overly grieved at having to leave Simeon, since Simeon seemed to be the ringleader of a lot of their problems. And so they later didn't seem to be in any hurry to go back to Egypt to get him. Simeon was really probably not the best loved among them for obvious reasons. The journey back home must have been over a distance of about 250 miles or more. Probably Jacob was still living in Hebron at this time. And Joseph's headquarters as the main administrator of this grain program was probably still around the city of Memphis, which is about 10 miles south of the present city of Cairo. So the journey would take them about 3 weeks to get back to their home where Jacob was. Well, verses 27 and 28 say, "And as one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender in the inn, he espied his money, for behold, it was in his sack's mouth. And he said unto his brethren, My money is restored, and lo, it's even in my sack. And their heart failed them, and they were afraid, saying one to another, What is this that God hath done unto us?" So somewhere along the way, their extra provisions were apparently used up enough so that one of them opened his sack to get grain for his ass. He was unhappy when he found that His money was there on top of the grain. His brothers were likewise afraid when he told them what he'd found. It apparently did not occur to them at the time that the money would be found in all the sacks. They knew they'd paid for the grain, but now it was obvious that somehow not all the price had been paid, and that was real reason for alarm. When the time came when they'd have to go back to Egypt, the government would now have a legitimate charge to bring against them, and they attributed this development also to the Lord's judgment on them, having already become greatly aware of the apparent relation between their own predicament and the one which they had inflicted upon Joseph. Apparently, they were already near home by the time that they had to dip into this sack, so they soon reached their father and told him the whole story. In spite of Jacob's advanced age, he was still very much the dominant figure in the family, and none of his sons questioned his authority or his ability. Verses 29 through 34 say, "And they came unto Jacob their father into the land of Canaan, and told him all that befell unto them, saying, The man who is the Lord of the land spake roughly to us, and he took us for spies of the country. And we said unto him, We are true men, we are no spies. We be 12 brethren, sons of our father. One is not, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan. And the man, the Lord of the country, said unto us, Hereby shall I know that you are true men. Leave one of your brethren here with me, and take food for the famine of your households, and be gone. And bring your youngest brother unto me. Then shall I know that you are no spies, but that you are true men. So will I deliver you your brother, and ye shall traffic in the land." So when they told Joseph about the governor's demand that they bring Benjamin down next time they came, they realized he would be greatly displeased. He'd be unhappy about this. But of course it was necessary to tell him if they wished to continue buying grain in Egypt. And if they wished to recover Simeon, they would have to do it. Verse 35 says, "And it came to pass as they emptied their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when both they and their father saw the bundle of money, they were afraid." So after they told the story, they then went about the task of emptying their sacks of grain into the storehouse. Now they were shocked to find in each man's sack the bundle of money which he had supposedly paid for the grain. They had come out of Egypt not only with a large supply of food, but had done so without paying for it. They realized that this would all be subject to the charge of theft when they returned. Up until this point, Jacob had apparently taken their bad news with relative calm, but now both he and his sons were greatly alarmed. Verse 36, "And Jacob their father said unto them, Me have ye bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away. All these things are against me." Jacob accused his 9 sons, and this was really more of a true accusation than he really realized, of having been responsible for the loss of 2 of his children, Joseph and Simeon, and now surely they were going to cause the loss of Benjamin also, which was more than he could bear. And not only this, but even if they went into Egypt with Benjamin, as the man had instructed them, they could all be charged with robbery, and maybe none of them would be allowed to return. Jacob would lose his entire family, and then how could God's plan for Israel ever be accomplished? He was upset, and he had good reason here on the surface to be upset. Before he could really think the situation through, before he could really regain his trust and faith in God, he cried out that everything was against him. But we see quite the contrary is true. Not only were all things not working against him, but as a matter of fact, at this moment, all things were working together for good for him. We remember the great truth there taught in Romans 8:28, and we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. So that's exactly what was happening here. These strange and bizarre events, these things that looked so bad on the surface, were really working together for good for God's people. And so it often is with God's people. Even when all the circumstances seem negative, God is working positively on behalf of those who are the called according to his purpose. There is never just cause to fear that God has let things get out of control, that God does not have the power to do what he needs to do, that God is now in a state of lost control. He has higher purposes related to our eternal future, and he is preparing us for this through such difficulties as these. Verse 37, and Reuben spake unto his father, saying, slay my two sons if I bring him not to thee. Deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him again to thee. So here Reuben was upset by his father's unhappiness, his father's distress. Reuben was typically concerned and meaning well, but he was unstable and maybe easily confused. So Reuben rashly promised that he would be responsible for Benjamin if Jacob would let him go with them. If anything happened to him, he assured his father, then Jacob could slay Reuben's own two sons in punishment. Of course, this would be no satisfaction to his father to kill two of his grandsons simply because he lost two of his own sons. That's not good reasoning at all. Reuben simply wasn't thinking straight when he spoke like this, and he was trying to appear noble to his father, who had long since been badly disappointed in his eldest son, and he only succeeded in still looking more foolish. Verse 38, and he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead. He is left alone. If mischief befall him by the way, in the way which you go, then shall you bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. So Jacob simply refused altogether to consider letting Benjamin go to Egypt. He had grieved so bitterly over Joseph that he was not willing to even think about allowing Benjamin to risk his life too. If anything would happen to Benjamin, Jacob felt that he himself could not survive. He would go down to the grave. This word means Sheol, the place of the departed spirits. If he no longer had Benjamin, at least to remind him of Rachel and Joseph, he couldn't live any longer. And there the matter stood for the time being. Jacob resolutely refused to let Benjamin go. And he was probably overcome by some of his emotional feeling here. But the other brothers knew at the same time that he must let Benjamin go, or they could not go back. They couldn't go back for more grain. They couldn't go back to rescue Simeon. And so all they knew that it was necessary that to be able to go back and go back with Benjamin, they were now at a stalemate with Jacob. Jacob refused to let him go. And so we see at this point that we bring the 42nd chapter of Genesis to a close. In our next study, we will begin the 43rd chapter and continue this story of Joseph with his brethren as they make the journey back into Egypt. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.
I'm satisfied with just the cottage below, a little silver and a little gold. But in that city where the ransom will shine, I want a gold one, that silver line. I got a mansion just over the hilltop in the garden where we'll never grow old.
Parker was recognized as the leader of the group. At one time, the scholars thought this whole story to be just a fable. This was because it was so difficult to identify the kings, and because